It's the new season of What Do You Know with Joe. We're back, baby.
Sit down and chop it up. Let's talk about it.
Well, let's ask the right question.
Who's convinced?
We're starting to see the mind brain stuff now.
It's What Do You Know with Joe. What's going on, everybody? It's season 3 of What Do You Know with Joe. I am so excited, and as always, like we do on the beginning of each show, we have Baxter, we have Winnie, we've got Lindsay, and now, drumroll please, we've got Ada. So happy she's healthy, she's in our lives now since we last did the pod, so super excited to include her, and also I could see her coming on the pod one day. I could see it happening. She would probably crush it. Welcome to the new season. Really excited. I think the first guest is a banger. He is the current Formula E driver, one of the two Formula E drivers from Maserati. He's got an extensive career so far. He's been on the junior Red Bull team, was on a bunch of different teams. He's been really crushing it through. He's been on the podium, which I think says a lot, and I think he's going to do some good stuff for Maserati. Talk about a man named Jahan Deruvilla. I'm really excited for everyone to hear his, you know, interview, what we talked about, you know, his beginnings, his upbringings, how he got into karting and in racing and the paths he's taken and what he's looking forward to now. He's also going to get some sick Maseratis from Maserati. I think everyone would be excited to hear those. Tune in for sure. But yeah, no, I'm not going to take any more time. Let's go ahead and jump into it. It's been a minute. I'm excited to get back into it. This is going to be a lot of fun, but here we go. Here's the interview with Jahan. Really excited. Welcome to another episode of What Do You Know with Joe? First season episode of the new season. Super happy to have Jahan Deruvilla with me. Jahan, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, no, we were chopping up a little bit before we got started. You're just kind of, you know, hanging with some friends right now, doing some hanging. The season started though, right? We've kind of gotten started. We're just, you know, having a little bit of free time.
Yes, so we had a busy month in January, but actually, because the race got cancelled in Hyderabad, we have like over 1 month off before the next round in Brazil.
Nice.
And I had to be home anyways to sort my visas out, because having an Indian passport, I have to get visas for all of the countries that I'm racing in. So, sorting out all my visas before the rest of the season. So, yeah, that's mainly why I'm back home.
I didn't even think about that, honestly, right? Like, because technically, like, you're working in those countries, right? So you have to have, like, visas to, like drive there and do stuff like that, right? Or, like, is that why you have to have all those visas?
Yeah, I mean, even if I'm going to visit, I have to have the visas. So I just need the visas to get into the country.
Yeah, that makes sense. I totally get that. I didn't even think about that. And, you know, just to give you some background on our show, so, like, you know, it's strictly educational from people who, you know a lot about formula racing to all the way in the end of the other spectrum where they're like, I just want to learn. So really just excited to learn a lot about you, how you kind of got involved, and then where you currently are today with MSG and Maserati. So let's kind of start from the top. Tell us a little about, you know, your childhood. What was it like growing up, you know, sports, academics, things like that, family? Just love to, you know, get to know what it was like growing up.
Yeah, so I was born and brought up in Mumbai in India. I studied here till like eighth or ninth, most of ninth grade. I was racing for around 2 years while I was still in Mumbai and living here and going to school in India.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was 11 or like, yeah, 12 years old, it was the Force India One in a Billion hunt. And I was one of the three winners. So at that time, I had to race in UK and move abroad. So that's when things got super serious.
Mm-hmm.
So I, my GCSEs in the UK. And yeah, that's, I would say, when my racing really got serious. So I did all of my karting then in the UK and Europe. And then after that, I progressed, you know, onto cars, did Formula Renault and Formula 3, Formula 2, and now driving Maserati in Formula E. So yeah, I started racing when I was 10 years old. So around 15 years ago now.
Yeah. And was it all karting? Were you doing, like you mentioned, you were playing some paddle with some boys before. Like, was karting and racing your sport that you're like, I really like this? Or were you playing like other things?
I play a lot of sports anyways. You know, I love playing sports, but there was no real sport where I thought that I will make it my profession or my career. I used to just play it more for fun. Well, with racing, it was pretty early on that firstly, I started when I was 9 or 10. So it's considered late in motorsport. Yeah. But yeah, as soon as I did it, I knew it was kind of one thing I wanted to take super seriously and make it my career and profession. So yeah, I definitely play a lot of other sports, but there was no sport where I thought like I can do this for a living. So I would say racing stands out in that perspective.
Gotcha. And so and you mentioned karting, right? You were in UK doing all that. You know, tell us a little about like some of the I feel like a lot of and especially if people are new to the sport, they don't realize that a lot of, you know, drivers get their start. That's where they get their start with like Carlin and things like that. So, you know, when you were in karting, you know, tell us a little about that. But then also like, you know, what are some like top three skills or a couple skills where you were like, okay, this is, you know, you kind of honed in on them and they were things that you, you know, kind of take into now even potentially like what in karting kind of also, you know, made you get elevated to the next level?
I think sports in general, but also racing, you know, there's so many ups and downs in this sport, especially as like a racing driver. You know, you're competing against 100 people in every single go-kart race almost. So to be the sole winner is always difficult. You know, there are many races where you go through ups and downs. So that kind of that karting journey really prepares you for the future. You know, in the end, we're still driving a machine. So you can be race, you can have a mechanical failure or your tire come off. So it's not all in your control. So you kind of learn things from karting. I would say number one thing you learn is like your race craft. The number two thing is like you learn to handle all the situations of racing, like all the ups and downs, all the emotions. And like number three is just, you know, the art of the racing line, the art of driving in the rain, you know, where the grip is not. All these things you learn in karting. You know, there are exceptions of people who come straight to Formula cars and they do well. But I would say most Formula One drivers, most Formula E drivers, or most professional racing drivers, I would say 99% of them have a good karting background.
Yeah. I agree. I spoke with another Formula E racer and he, you know, similarly got a start in karting, and it seems like that's something also a lot of people get their start in. And like you said, I think you hit the nail on the head there. You're still driving machines, right? There are things that can happen. So like that initial premise of, you know, it's just on a larger scale now, but like that initial premise of that understanding. So you kind of started picking it up like pretty well. You know, you're carrying some hardware, starting kind of jumping up through the tracks. You know, tell us a little about like, you know, how that kind of got you to, you know, the Renault 2.0, your Formula 3 career. Tell us about the early entry into, you know, jumping from that karting car to the larger Formula cars.
Yeah, so, yeah, most of my career in Europe in karting, I was with the Sarah Force India Academy at that point. So it was a changing point in my career to be part of that team, you know, Indian team in Formula 1 supporting a young driver on go-karting. I always had like the best equipment, the best coaches, you know, everything that everyone else also had to give me an equal opportunity to perform. At the end of my karting career, they also backed me and they supported me. So I went from karting into Formula Renault. It was a pretty big jump. Most people nowadays, the kind of normal path is to go from karting to Formula 4. And then 3, 2, 1 or Formula E. So it's more structured. Let's say in the last 4 or 5 years, it's changed the structure. Not too many people go down some do to the Renault route, but most people start their careers in Formula 4 now. It's very rare to get to Formula Renault or Formula 3.
Yeah.
I kind of did Formula Renault for a couple of years. I did Formula 3 for 2 years. That was the time that Force India then no longer had a team, so I was an independent driver in Formula 3 in 2019. I drove for Prema and was fighting for the entire season, and that's the year that Red Bull like saw some talent and potential in me, and I then became a Red Bull Junior in the beginning of 2020, and was with them for my first 3 years of Formula 2. And now I'm in obviously in Formula E, the only rookie on the grid this year, and he had to drive for Maserati MSG Racing in my rookie year in Formula E. So a huge privilege because they are a team which already has success, and to be in a competitive car in your first season is something really to be grateful for.
I agree, and also kudos to you. That's a huge accomplishment. And I think, you know, I just, if anyone's just taking even a glance at your career, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, and how much more you're going to jump and quickly keep going. And we're going to allude to that a little bit later, but you mentioned a little bit about, you know, your Red Bull team, and, you know, your beginnings in the, you know, F3 career. You know, tell us about some of your top moments, even if it was that, and maybe what it was like, you know, stepping on that podium for the first time. You know, I know, especially, and you kind of alluded to in 2020, I can't imagine what, like, especially when, you know, the pandemic happened and all that, that's another, you know, variable into the situation. Walk us through some of those moments of, you know, not only starting in 2020, right, you know, being, you know, top moments up in your career, but then also, like, what it was kind of like racing during the pandemic.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I would say, like, initially, just being part of the Force India Driver Academy was a big highlight for me. Then, you know, winning the British Karting Championship in 2013, standing on the World Championship podium, being the only in 2014. Then, yeah, I had a successful year in Formula Renault. I won races in Formula 3. I was fighting for the championship in Formula 3 and signing for Red Bull for Formula 2. And I would say in 2020, winning my first race in Formula 2 and hearing the national anthem on the board. Yeah, it was really cool. So I would say these moments you never forget in your kind of journey and in your career. And especially 2020, like, you know, in the pandemic, it was super difficult. I mean, in a way, it was... Yeah, obviously the pandemic was super bad for everything that happened. But in a way, it worked out for me better because I had just... my knee playing football. I tore my ACL, MCL, and meniscus like just a couple of months before the season started.
Oh,
so I had 2 or 3 months extra to recover before the season. I mean, I was anyways gonna drive. I did the testing. I couldn't even walk, and I was still like driving the car.
Man.
But yeah, definitely helpful to be had those couple of months. You know, to be home with my friends, my family, to be able to hit my. Like the rehab and all the stuff I had to do at home to completely get ready for the season. But it was a unfortunate but a blessing in disguise for me in a way. I was fully ready and fit for my first season with Red Bull in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And that season was super hectic, you know, because everything got delayed and then we crammed the whole season in just a couple of months. So, yeah, it was it's a year I won't forget, especially, you know, with the pandemic, signing for Red Bull, and then also my first win in Formula 2. So
that's got to, like you said, that's got to be crazy to be, like, on the podium, hearing your national anthem, like, eyes on you, just kind of, like, that's got to be just one of the coolest moments. Like, that's just got to be something different that you, once-in-a-lifetime kind of experience.
Yeah, definitely. It was super cool. Also, most of the year, you know, because of the pandemic, I didn't have my family around for any of the moments or the races. It was a super difficult year for me as well. And yeah, my family couldn't be there. But it was the first weekend my father attended. And then, yeah, I was on the podium and then I won a race. So that was awesome as well. And
kind of like also like solidification that all this hard work is paying off. You're getting up on the podium, you're working your butt off, and you know, there's the reward now too, a little bit too. I mean, even if, you know, at the end of the day, like if you were especially like finishing, like, you know, you worked so hard your whole career, the fact that, you know, even coming in top, you know, placing is crazy, but to get on top of the podium, win a race is something else. So how did you, you know, initially, especially, how did you learn about Formula E and like, I feel like, especially over the past couple of years, that's just quickly started getting up, especially with like the push for electric cars and things like that. How did you kind of first hear about that and what made you kind of interested in it?
Yeah, so honestly, as a kid, my childhood dream was always to drive in Formula One. You know, but as I grew up and I kind of was in Formula Two, so close to Formula One, you know, it's even difficult when you're winning in Formula 2 to go to Formula 1. So, you know, I quickly realized that, you know, there's an outside chance to go, but there are more opportunities outside of Formula 1. You know, if I didn't take these opportunities, I don't know when I would get them again. And Formula E for me is the fastest growing motorsport in the world. Not in a, like, I don't know. I would say, like, the level, the average level of Formula E drivers is probably, like, quite close to Formula One in terms of, obviously, you have a lot of, like, yeah, obviously, you have the Verstappens, the Leclercs, the Hamiltons, the Norris, Formula One, but, like, just the average, like, if I would take any of the 20 drivers in Formula E to be my teammate in Formula 2, I would know I'm in for a tough season. So you have, like, 22 drivers on the grid who can win races and who are super fast and and good. So, yeah, I would say it's one of the most competitive championships in the world as well, because everyone almost has the same cars. So, drivers can really make a difference as well. So I think, like I said, I always wanted to go to Formula One, but I'm super happy to be in Formula E. You know, it's not easy. It's super difficult. So I still need to have a good season, good results to make sure I can keep this as my career for the next few years at least.
Yeah, and to your point too, I mean, it's almost like, you know, I think every driver's kind of had it, but your resume, so to speak, of like different kind of cars you've driven is like completely like driving, you know, all the way from a beginning karting car. I know that like in each, and for people who don't know, the same car that they're driving in Formula One isn't the same one that they're driving in Formula Three, or even, I mean, obviously Formula E too, but like the car sizes, the engines, things like that, like even potentially the tires are different. Like you've driven so many different cars, and like you've, you know, like, and you have that, what's the word I'm looking for? Essentially, you just have all that knowledge about how the different cars work. So like, if anything, you know, you've adapted to a lot of different situations, that, which I think is, like you said, says a lot about a Formula E racer, because they're able to adapt. And I mean, you also look at the sponsors of a lot. I mean, obviously MSG and Maserati, but you have like some Porsche teams coming in there, Andretti. You have a lot of good sponsors putting money into Formula E, like you said, that I think it's going to keep growing. And it's definitely something that's crazy to see how quickly it's grown. Tell us a little about the Maserati team. What are you looking forward to throughout the season? Present day, here we are. Maserati MSG is a great team. Tell us a little about, you know, how it's going.
Yes, you know, towards the end of last year when I knew I was going to drive for them, I kind of, quickly went to Monaco to get associated with the team. That's where they are based. To drive for Maserati MSG Racing is, like I said earlier, a huge privilege. You know, they're a luxury brand, and to be here in my rookie season is really awesome. You know, I have a great relationship with all of the guys and girls in our team. I have a great bunch of engineers, great crew, great mechanics, and we always have one goal. You know, we are pushing our best every weekend, not only at the track but also at the simulator, at the office. You know, trying to extract every small bit of performance to try to maximize our potential. So it's been great. You know, obviously the results haven't been fantastic as of yet. You know, I could have been in the points in Diriyah, but we had an issue on the brakes. So now I'm looking forward to, you know, the rest of the season. I'm sure it's going to be fun, but I'm looking forward to getting some good results and doing well for the team.
It's a long season. You know, you guys are just starting, you know, early on, so you got a long way there. We're rooting for you for sure. Love to also now get you, before we jump into, you know, what I'd love to ask more about, but you mentioned Monaco and you mentioned these courses, and to your point before about, you know, Formula E getting a lot of money and these teams joining in, you know, what do you think that means longevity of the sport in the terms of like car sizes, things like that? You know, as more teams and more sponsors and everyone gets involved, you have more cars on the track, that makes it harder, you know. These cars are already so large. It's definitely, and you have these tracks that are historical, but maybe not built so much for it. You know, do you see potentially consolidations of teams, or like with more teams, like car sizes even getting even further changed? Like, tell me a little bit about what your perspective is about the growth of the sport, where it's going, and, you know, how that plays into also the logistics of the sport.
Yes, I think, you know, the sport is growing super quickly. If you see where they've come from season one to now season 10, you know, they've come a long way, especially with the cars, with the teams, but also the fan base is growing year to year. You know, the fans know the drivers from the past. They know how good all the drivers are. So the drivers and as well teams like Porsche, McLaren, Maserati, you know, all of these big brands being in Formula E really helps the championship. And as well, in the future, the cars are just going to get faster and better and more efficient. You know, I'm not going to be surprised in the next 2 years if we do 0 to 100 in less than 2 seconds. I think yeah. it's a huge possibility, especially with four-wheel drive coming wow. in the near future. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of technology which is still to be improved and to be developed. But, you know, things are moving super quickly. So even in the next 3 or 4 years from now, I think these cars will be much bigger, much faster, driving on bigger racetracks and even more entertaining for the fans.
I agree. And I think, right, that's the biggest thing. You have a lot of people with eyes on it now. I think situations like Drive to Survive and things like that are just going to continue to grow recognition to the sport. But it also gives drivers the opportunity to gain more recognition and, you know, grow as a whole. And I think, you know, that was something else I was talking with someone this past week about. Just, you know, you kind of said it a little bit, right? Like money, like there's cars are going to get faster. People are going to throw more money at this. You're going to have more teams want to get involved. It's going to keep growing. So especially when it comes to like, do you see with that as well, other cities and other places trying to get more tracks and trying to get more locations for racing? Like, do you think, you know, especially you mentioned Monaco, and there's always going to be the top locations, but do you think you're going to continue to see more evolution into where these races are going to go?
Yeah, I would say yes. I think, you know, already Formula E goes to some very big cities. Also, kind of now, in Formula E, they're trying to race in the heart of the city. So in the streets, you know, in all of these tracks. So that is their main idea right now. But obviously, as the cars get bigger and faster, even if you drive on the streets, you need a bit bigger ones, you know.
Yeah, right.
I think, honestly, in the next couple of years, you're going to have some really cool races coming onto the calendar. And why not, you know, big cities like New York and stuff can also come back. So, I mean, I don't know too much on that side as a driver. I just leave that up to Formula E.
Right, exactly.
We're just there to drive, to work with the team and to do the best results. And we don't choose where we are driving.
Yeah, I'm sure FIA is not like, hey, John, if you had to pick top five places you'd like to drive, where would that be? They don't, you know, they're not going to do that. But it is, you know, I think that is part of the balance, right? They do, to any extent, they should listen to the drivers and what the feedback they get there. You mentioned, you know, Formula One, right? You've had a little taste doing some like testings and things like that for McLaren and a few others. Is that still on your map, right? Is that something that you're like, hey, I mean, I'm still striving to get there. I'm, you know, that's something you want to potentially look at down the road. Whether that's, you know, I can see Maserati, MSG, you know, growing like crazy, but I could also see, you know, they've got the money if they do successful. If you guys win and do things, I could see them having a team there. Like, is that something you've still potentially thought about, or, you know, is that something right now you're just focusing on Maserati?
I mean, honestly, being in motorsport and knowing everything that I know and in the market, you know, I would say getting a Formula One seat is so difficult right now. You know, even winning a Formula Two championship,
yeah,
sometimes not enough. If you see, the last two champions are not in Formula One, so sometimes things are completely out of your control. Even champions do not be in F1, it's how difficult it is. So right now my whole like focus, my whole attention is all on Formula E. You know, that's where I'm focusing. I'm trying to make my future in Formula E. But you know, yeah, who knows what happens in the future. You know, if I'm not in Formula E, if there's an opportunity in Formula One, no one is going to say no. So you know, you would take it. So yeah, in the end, like I said, realistically, it's not something that I'm looking at right now. You know, I know where my priority lies and where my future is right now, and it's looking more and more like Formula E.
Yeah, no, and hey, I think, you know, like you said, Formula E, I think, what was it, last year, or I think it was last year, a few years ago, they were in Brooklyn. I mean, like, those, especially with the craze and the popularity around electric cars and things like that, initially, like, Formula E sticks out to me as like something I'd be like, I'd be interested in that, right? Like, I'd be, and especially when you get the cool sponsors around them too. I don't think it's something that you know, I think, and a lot of people probably, you know, don't, you know, either see it this way or they do, but like, you guys are racing just as hard. You guys are putting just as much effort in. You're putting in all the same hours. It's the same level of competition. It's just on a different car, a different form. But no, I agree. I think you guys are crushing it. And I also think that, you know, even as the sport grows even more, you're going to be seeing more and more, you know, Formula races on streaming services, ESPN, you know, your Sky Sports, things like that. So I think it's, you know, something that's growing. So, Johan, I really appreciate, you know, you taking the time to dive into all this. I love that you got to share your growing, your come up. You know, for anyone listening and whoever's, you know, interested in Formula, feel free to, you know, tune into these. Last bit of question. I always like to throw this, and I've asked this to everyone. Like, I've asked this to pro football players. I've asked this to, like, interior designers. It's just a fun question just because, like, you know, you don't think, and it's just interesting. And you can't use your car because that'd be cheating. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the movie Step Brothers in America, with like Will Ferrell and
I think I'm older.
Yeah. Well, so in that, gotcha. So in that movie, like, and it's definitely this could be an interview question for sure. In that movie, there's a scene where they have to like fight a ton of fifth graders. I'm curious, like in your situation, how many fifth graders do you think you could fight before they overpower you, or before, you know, they like, you know, I mean, especially in today's day and age, fifth graders are built different. They're a little bit bigger. So love to know,
like, if I had to push them away in a physical fight. You mean?
Oh yeah, they're coming. They're coming for you, Johan. They're coming for you, and they're not holding back. So you've got to, and it's just an endless stream of them, right? There's a ton of them. So yeah, I'm curious to know how many you think you can take over.
I think I can confidently say 50.
Okay, 50. If you can, a little bit, tell us a little about that. You know, is it because, I mean, I would say you guys put your bodies through so much. You probably train really well, so I can see that. But 50 is a good number. I respect that. I respect 50.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, if I'm, you know, well, I think, like, I know how I was when I was in the fifth grade. I was pretty lanky.
Right. Good point.
I mean, I've not met too many American fifth graders. Maybe they are like, maybe stronger than I was when I was in the. But I think I'm just saying this because I've seen a football match where two professional players play against 100 school kids and they beat them. So I'm thinking, like, why not 50 against?
I kind of fall similarly to that because, you know, at the end of the day, fifth graders might be. I've seen some fifth graders in America where it's like, okay, I can't believe you're in fifth grade, but at the end of the day, they're still fifth grader, right? You take that one out, there's still 50 other lanky ones who, you know, aren't, you know, gonna be able to put up as much. And to your point, you know, it's a psychological thing too. You know, this fifth grader sees you taking down 25 other ones. That's like, crap, am I gonna be able to take this kid down or this guy down? Probably not. So, no, I appreciate your insight there. It's just a fun question. I love asking everyone. It's different, throws off the whole, you know, educational thing. It's still learning. You still learn that some people, you know, can take down a good mess of fifth graders. So I appreciate that. He was a professional football player in the States. He's retired now, but he was like, I gave him the same thing. And he's like, I'm taking down all of them. And I was like, you're going to take down over like 100 fifth graders. He's like, yeah, I'm taking out all those kids. And I'm like, and he was getting deep in it too. He was like, I mean, I'm going to make them know their parents could be right there. I don't give a damn. I'm taking down all these kids. So like, I've heard all the way from like over 100 to 50. And then I've had like, there's a university basketball coach that I spoke to, and he had seen the movie, and he was like, you know, there's also a scene in the movie where he's like, I want to take a different, he's like, I'm just going to avoid that situation as a whole, which I think he was sitting on the fence. He's like, I can't really come out and say as a college coach, like, I'm going to beat up a bunch of kids. But like at the same time too, I was like, you know, I want to know how many you can take down. So I've heard a wide range. I personally, in my current state, I'm confident with a little over 20, but you know, I had a torn ACL, and partially torn meniscus back when I was younger, and now being a little bit older, you know, if they hit that weak spot, I don't know what can happen, man. I don't know. I hope they don't find that weakness, but you know, I like to think I'm in the 20 range.
Yeah, but
It's tough. It's tough. But before I let you go, man, again, I really appreciate your time. Before I let you go, is there anything else, you know, you wanted to share? Is there anything else, you know, you would want to share on like Formula Racing to someone who just wouldn't know or anything like that?
No, I think I'm pretty happy. I think we covered everything that, yeah, you wondered. If there's anything else, yeah, you can let me know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, you're, thank you for coming on the show. You're, and anyone who comes on the show, we're a fan of the pod, fan of them. We're going to be rooting for you. If anybody ever asks, they're like, hey, who are you rooting for? You know, I'm pulling for Jahan and Maserati for sure. You know, oh, that's what I wanted to ask you, low key. And again, it's sidebar question. And if it's cool, if you can't answer it, you always see it in formula for like, and for those who have seen it, I've had people, you know, you always see like these formula drivers, you know, if they're on the team, right, they, like, for instance, you see Verstappen, he gets a Honda Civic. You see, you know, when he was on the team, he's coming up in McLaren. Did Maserati hook you up with a Maserati? What are you driving? Can we know?
Yeah, it's got a, in Monaco, I have this Maserati Grecale. But in the next couple of months, I get, the Gran Turismo electric one. So let's see.
That's so sick. Oh, that's tight. Oh, that's awesome. I'm glad to hear. And I mean, deservingly so, you know, you should get one, but that's awesome. I'm sure those are fun to drive. Very jealous. Had to ask that in there real quick. That's awesome. Well, Jahan, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Go enjoy your free time. We'll be rooting for you this season. And I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, man. You have a good